You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Good Friday morning. It is Friday. Coming to you live from the West Coast in Hollywood, California, where I'm losing my voice after a lot of interviewing that has been happening to help get people excited about my book. It is coming soon. It is time for another episode of the John and Dave Show. Good morning. Where has my voice gone? I don't know. I'll give you a little sense of the view that's happening outside of the old room now. There's Hollywood, California. Beautiful Hollywood and Highland happening in real time. And the only thing missing is Mr. John Acuff, ladies and gentlemen. John, are you there?
Hey.
Good morning.
Is Tom Cruise outside? When you panned, I felt like I saw him for a second.
It's so funny. He just came by to offer us some new towels, which I thought was a lovely gesture from Tom. Thanks, Tom.
That guy does everything. That's my first question. Have you met Tom Cruise? You probably have.
I have not met Tom Cruise. He, from everything I've heard, is one of the most intense human beings on the planet.
Yeah, he's probably hanging on the side of a plane right now as we speak. That's how he travels. A lot of people don't know that.
Doing his own stunts. Come on. Come on.
Who could you still meet that you would freak out? So you walk out this room, you go out to get some kind of kale smoothie, whatever it is you're eating these days, and you run into blank and you freak out.
It doesn't exist.
There's nobody you'd be amazed by?
No, the thing is, I would be amazed, but the idea of freaking out is a thing that, and this is again, Dave, is your wiring messed up? I had the privilege of doing this stinking job for such a long time that I ran into people that just kept on crossing thresholds of oh my goodness, I can't believe it. Then now I'm here's what it is. I will tell you what it is. I admired people that then I one day got to work with that then inevitably let me down almost every single time. Almost every single time.
Now, let me ask you this, though, because did they let you down because they're human or because you had expectations that they'd be something that they couldn't be?
Both. That is exactly what it was, right? They let me down because they actually, not even that they were human, because I'd like to think that you can be human and decent. There were some times. So I had this experience with a show that I was introducing the cast to each other at the beginning of the show taking place that then became a very, very big show called That 70s Show. And it was a thing where I met all of these kids when they themselves had never worked in the business, didn't have any expectations of what life would be like. And then 2.5 years into the show, when it was obvious, oh, we're heading to syndication. Yeah. It's going to be a big show. The things that they become expectant of, in part because of the way I'd enabled them with a bunch of things that they got whenever they asked for it, changed a little bit of the tenor with which they, and by the way, I'm sure that they have all become adults, because this was if you give 20-year-olds everything, of course, they're going to be, a little bit interesting.
If you gave me a $20 bill when I was 20, I would have been cocky.
Right.
If you were here's a $20, I'm going to give you one $20 bill a week for the next 52 weeks. I would have been I would have been pushing old women down to get to the line faster and be do you know who I am? So I always try to keep that in mind. It doesn't take much. I only had to ride on a private plane once to be I can never go on public planes. It's like a Greyhound. My ability to become cocky and jerky, I think, is the nicest word, because I'm trying to keep it polite. But so I can't imagine if
there was
real fame.
An actor whom I had put on a pedestal, And I got an opportunity to more or less become like a talent wrangler for this person, which is a strange word, but like it was now my job to get this person whatever they needed. And I thought, I have made it. I'm going to hang with my hero. It is amazing. And like the second day on the job, and this is a long time ago, I will not say the name, but very, very big actor. I was sent to pick up some adult film material for him on the second day. On the second day. I don't even know you yet, sir. I have put you on a pedestal. Oh.
Did he give you specifics, or was it he wanted a grab bag?
A very specific specific.
Oh, no. Dude.
Even saying the name of the specific thing is not appropriate for a morning web program.
No, dude, that is...
not appropriate.
Because I thought I was going to tell you my story. There's an author I know who used to have his staff move furniture around in his hotel before he got there. And I'm talking like, it'd be a fine hotel, don't get me wrong, but he likes the furniture a certain way. And the idea that I would ever tell somebody, where's the cabinet going to be in my hotel room? And they tell me, I go, no, wrong, wrong. I need it at an angle. Like when I come in the room, I don't want to have that cabinet too close. Like that is hilarious to me that I can't believe he had to do that.
Where are you at, John?
I'm in a coffee shop. I'm in one of my favorite coffee shops in Franklin, where I live. We just had a team meeting where, like, we reviewed stuff for the year. Like, we were like, oh, we got to do all this.
So, big paper means it's important.
And it sticks. So once you're sticking stuff to walls, you're like, this man's about business. Like, this man, he is Slay Queen, Slay. That's what people say when you stick stuff to walls.
Oh.
That's what they say, yeah.
How many people are on the John Acuff extravaganza bus?
There were three in the meeting today, including me. So
nice.
I'm trying to keep it real lean. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I got to scale and have 50 people. Like, nah, I like a small team. Like, I want to be able to, the bigger the team gets, the less I have time to write. And I know what my thing is. Like, I know what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm supposed to be writing, writing, writing. But the ego part of me, when somebody's like, how big is your team? I sometimes want to go, it's like 1,000 people and I have a helicopter. Like, don't get me wrong. The ego part of me jumps up and I'm like, I really like a small team.
I relate to this. Trust, man. I have like a single person who is, well, now there's two it's a shared resource too with Heidi, but there's two people that are actually like on payroll as it were. And every other person is like, I'm off like kind of outsourcing a marketing agency or like I have no staff and it is, it's beautiful. Thank you very much.
I love it. I have an amazing assistant that all my friends try to hire. So like, they'll go, hey, because they'll experience something amazing she does. And they'll be like, hey, is she taking on new clients? And I'm like, you shut your mouth. Like, no, I know it. Like, it's the same with babysitting. Like, let's be honest as parents. You send your B-level team to your friends. You keep the A-level because you don't want to call up and be like, hey, can you babysit? And they go, I'm sorry, I'm already babysitting for your friend, you know, Chris. So like,
you know what happens. You know that happens.
You keep the roster. You keep your roster. You're not going to send somebody dangerous, but you're going to send, like, you know, the person who's consistent-ish. Like, hey, you know what? Yeah. Like, here's... No.
What's your assistant's name?
Ashley.
And what is her email address?
No, we've been together for 6 years, dude. 6 years. First three assistants, I didn't know how to work with an assistant. I was a terrible boss. But then I kind of figured some stuff out. Now it's better. So, and I think there's somebody that's going to come back for that bag right now. One of my team members is going to make a cameo.
Because
she was just dropping stuff off. So... tell me latest, greatest, most exciting thing about the book. You're in book launch.
I'm in book launch. The latest thing that was great, and this is going to sound, there's a little ego in this, but I'm just going to say it out loud. I had this opportunity to do Tom Bilyeu's Impact Theory yesterday.
Oh, awesome.
I am such a fan of Tom's work, and I've also just been fortunate to become a friend of his over time. And as much as like you've been generous in saying a handful of things about the book, I think that there's bias in whatever you're going to say to me because you're my friend and and you need this show to continue to propel your career. And so I was a joke.
This is it. This is the rocket ride I've attached myself to.
But there was something about sitting with him yesterday while the camera is rolling that him suggesting some of the things that he suggested, not just about the book, but also the way that I have a differentiated perspective of myself from his perspective of me. Was a real gift because I am a very harsh critic of myself. I'm very I can be funny and I do think I like to have a good time, but man, I'm super hard on myself. And this, the pursuit that I'm in real time is to like really connect to and love myself. And mm-hmm. sometimes I have to borrow a little bit of other people's perspective to change some of the soundtracks, the stories that totally. I am running in my head. And so when I'm in this window as a creator, I'm so excited. I am so proud of the book. It is the best thing I've ever done in my entire career. I've done a lot of things in my career. And yet when you're 2.5 weeks out, I'm so conscientious of like, did I do it right? Did I do it well? Mm. Who's going to not like it? I'm focused on who's going to not like it instead of how many people it's going to help. And sitting on that couch yesterday, having a conversation with not just a friend, but someone who I respect in the midst of the taping, not off camera, saying some things. I was just like, you know what? Daddy needs this because I got a bunch of stuff in these last 2.5 weeks. So I appreciate that. And I'm hopeful that I'll continue to have like something of some affirming reminders of my truth instead of the lies that keep running in my head. And that's kind of the window I'm in, but I got a taste of that yesterday and it was a gift.
That's awesome. I always say, I used to write about this idea called critics math, where 100 compliments plus one insult equals one insult. Like when you do critics math. And my favorite example is Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Seinfeld. He goes to see the Yankees play. And they find out he's there. They show him on a big screen. They play the theme song to Curb Your Enthusiasm. And 50,000 people give him a standing ovation. 50,000 people. He's in the parking lot later that night. And a guy drives by and goes, "Hey, Larry, you suck." And he talks about that guy for the rest of the night. A single person made 50,000 people disappear. That's how powerful criticism is. So, yeah, you got to deliberately not focus on those people. There's going to be people that don't like it, just like there's people that don't like the stuff I do. And they're sticky. Like, maybe I told you this. Somebody said to me, "Do you want to know what Kurt Vonnegut said about Amazon reviews?" And I was like, "You should start every sentence that way." And he said, "Kurt Vonnegut told me, the friend of mine, that if there had been Amazon reviews, Mark Twain would have jumped off a building." Like, because back in the day, that didn't exist. There was a newspaper critic who that was their whole job. But now you have to read Amazon reviews as Amazon opinions. They're opinions. It's not an Amazon review. It's an opinion. And if you can make that switch for people, like, that critic, it was an opinion. Like, that for me is a soundtrack that's totally helped.
The amazing thing too is, like, and I keep reminding myself, I wrote this book for the people for whom it was intended. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this, like, this conceit in ego that has us believing that every single thing we make is for everyone or it's not good. And it's not. It's just not for everyone. See the way that I don't like Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, Star Wars, Star Trek, Star anything. They are still good things. They're just not for me. It doesn't make them bad because I'm not a fan. And the same is true for anything that you create or I create. And so, like, focusing on and staying connected to, I have people that if you're in the launch team, you can read the entire book in an early reader copy in real time. You can read the entire book today. And the feedback has been overwhelming.
And that's who it's for.
And yet I get a notice that, like, on Goodreads, they're starting to get reviews in. And of course I make the mistake you can't make. And I go in there and what do? I sort by stars. Ranking stars first.
Yeah. I don't know why we sometimes want a hit of sad or a hit of, you know, so I told you that somebody said about one of my books, I told you that they said it was a pamphlet. They said it was like a pamphlet. And Jenny now, part of the reclaiming that was, she now will go, "You're my favorite pamphlet writer." Like, you have to be able to get to a point where you can go. And, like, here's the other thing that I tell everyone watching this, your art is not your identity. It's a byproduct of your identity. And that's different.
That is good.
Like, and so the challenge is, you have to create with a full heart and then you have to let it go. You have to love it and be married to it and then divorce it to release it into the world. And you take your identity with you so you can create the next thing. So even though it's your heart, it's everything, it's your story, it's personal, your art is not your identity. It's a byproduct of your identity. And that's another soundtrack that, for me, if I can put that on repeat, I can keep creating new work and not get stuck.
Oh, man. The thing is, if you don't ascribe to that, you can't do the next thing.
No,
that is
you
a
can't.
You that is stuck. A gift. Oh, man. Yeah. I love it so much. The weird thing is, because you talked about it, you have to be willing to talk about the thing that you are creating for the rest of your life, because you're not going to have that many books.
Dude, I'm not. Neither are you.
Like, the other side of that coin is you can't think that you're only going to talk about this thing for the rest of your life, because that also ends up becoming a pigeonholed trap that doesn't allow you to move forward.
I got stuck between books for 4 years. My last two books, there was a 4-year gap, and it wasn't on purpose. It was that the longer I spent away from the muscle, the harder it was to develop it again. And so, and I think that's true of every talent, every craft, every gift, whatever. You start stacking up days on it, and it gets harder and harder and harder. And you go, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow. And then I looked up, and I had to write in this coffee house. I wrote an entire book no one will ever see. Like a 50,000 word book that my wife was like, you got to go write. You got to go write. And it's ridiculous. And it's like funny, but like I had to write my way. I did two things. I did a comedy set. I did a 60-minute comedy show. And then I wrote another book to kind of write my way out of the funk. It was the only way I could get out.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When are we taking this on the road? You and I on a stage doing conversations like this, but also your comedy? Come on.
Yeah. Dude, somebody asked me to do a comedy thing the other day, and I was like, it took me 3 months to write that set. Like, it's not easy. I have the most respect for people. The one joke I really liked was I said, every time I see somebody with a bumper sticker that says, my dog is smarter than your honor student, I think, how bad was your high school? Like, how bad was your high school that you think a dog is better than an honor student? Like, I've never met an honor student who throws up and then eats that throw up. Like, I've never seen a calculus AP student who gets afraid of thunder and has to wear a thunder shirt. Like, stop it. I love your dog. Your dog isn't smarter than an honor student. I'm sorry. That's not remotely true. Yeah.
John, just like, contrary to everything you've ever been told about, you are funny. You are a funny man.
Yeah, you know what that is? It's my height. If I was tall, I wouldn't have had to develop this. This is a survival mechanism, David.
You know what? I took the John Acuff picture yesterday. Actually, it was with Tom and Lisa Bilyeu. Shorter in stature. But when you see the two of us sitting, I mean, I had my elbow resting on her shoulder. Yeah. And they got the shot where the head's cut off. It's an instant classic.
I flew with a pro wrestler the other day who was 7'3". 7'3". He was in front of me on the plane and big. His name is Omos. He's from Nigeria. And he had to duck to get on the plane. And the back of the plane scraped his back. And I was like, oh. And everybody who would get on the plane would stop because he was in first class. So people kept like, there was like a pile up of people staring at this man going, Do you smash stuff? Like, if people wanted to ask the most obnoxious question, this poor guy. But it was really, pro wrestling was in town the night before in Nashville. So the plane was full of pro wrestlers. There's a question. Were you ever into pro wrestling?
100%. Finally, we found something that I was into. Yes. The Hulkamania era was something that I am a real American. I'm going to fight with Hacksaw, Jim Duggan.
Oh, yeah. Got the 2x4.
Jimmy the Steamboat Dragon and Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, Superfly Snuka.
Yeah. I mean, but that was it for me, for sure. And part of it was, again, being raised in the house I was raised in, very few things I could watch. Wrestling somehow made it past the
They sense. Gave you wrestling?
Gave me wrestling.
It's probably oiled up men in tights. Smurfs were. It's oiled up men in tights wrestling.
Didn't matter. I don't know. There must have been a couple of wrestlers that loved the Lord. I'm not sure.
Well, maybe. I mean, I think Jim Hacksaw would probably be not the Iron Sheik. I mean, as an American, you have to hate the Iron, even though he was probably from New Jersey.
The nationalism that was being stirred by hating that guy.
Yeah. Well, George the Animal Steel.
George the Animal Steel. I worried about him. I mean, the thing that did get a little blue was Miss Elizabeth. Let's be clear. She was always dressed to the nines.
Quiet. Very demure.
Very, very. Yeah,
so funny. Have you ever been to a WWE event?
I one time I took the cast of a show back at then when I was working at Fox. We were trying to launch shows, and the way that Fox launched shows, still to this day, like you turn on a Fox broadcasted football game, they're like, "Hey, look, there's Rob Lowe sitting in the audience wearing an NFL hat." You know,
That's so funny, because you know that doesn't convert. Like, there's no way to track that
at all.
I saw a man in a drama at a wrestling match. I do want to watch that show. Right. I like the way he eats popcorn. That doesn't
That doesn't do anything.
It's exposure. It's exposure.
Yeah. But exposure. At the time, it was a show that had a couple of children in the cast. And so there's grown-ups who were like, "We're in on this. We know the wrestling's real." And then there were a couple of kids that were like, "What is happening?" Like terrified, crying at one point because there's a lot of violence happening right in front of them.
Your job at any given moment in our 20 minutes or so together can go from, "I had to pick up questionable material from a place that the guy behind the counter probably had a gun," to, "I had to take children to WWE," to and then Air Buds in the mix somewhere. Every now and then
always.
There was
who's getting a puppy today? Who's getting a puppy today?
I'm curious. This is a question. You've got some people that are about to blow up and they become famous, become celebrities, whatever. How do they survive that? If you said, "Hey, here are three survival tips to surviving success and enjoying it," because it's not just survive, like enjoying it, what would you say they are?
The tough thing is, I think the people that have become successful or have succeeded had to go into the valley to be able to survive what exists on the other side of having climbed out of it. Like, I don't know that anyone, number one, someone like myself who hasn't personally experienced it, couldn't give someone who is about to experience life change and no more anonymity and you get everything and anything that you ask for, but don't let it go to your head. Like, I couldn't give advice, right? I couldn't give advice. I mean, and the weird thing is, like, the closest that I've experienced, certainly I had a little taste, as Rachel experienced, an unconventional 2018 and 19, where her book became something that changed public persona. And there are certainly some things I know, like, oh man, if I ever write a book that sells 5 million copies in a year and changes the way that I'm recognized in airports, I think I would do a few things personally. But I don't think you can tell a celebrity who's about to break, you know, like, the only person that maybe could is like, all right, you've got Al Pacino. You've got like someone who has successfully become an older generation in Hollywood who have been through everything, and now they're going to take that person aside. Or like George Clooney has reportedly done this to a handful of young actors who he's now directing in movies. And he said, like, "This is going to be the beginning of something. This is where you're not going to see it. And when you ultimately experience it, you know, try to at least stay connected to the people that matter most. Don't, you know, chase money and make sure you're saving all those things."
Yeah. But
I think you just got to kind of go through it, indulge in it, and then realize that all the things that you thought it was going to provide are not the things that are going to make you happy. And then you get back to like neutral.
And then you go back to doing the craft and the things you love and I think Matthew McConaughey's done that well, but he had to take a 2-year break from rom-coms. Like he had to deliberately reinvent himself and do a bunch of roles you wouldn't expect to change the arc. But I think some of it's family structure. I mean, I get that you're saying you can't describe that, but you do have a degree. Like there are 275 people watching us in t-shirts, and that might not be huge, but it's still bigger than none. Like, The problem for you, you're tall. Like, if I got famous, I throw on a hat, done. I look like every dad.
Anonymous.
Every dad. You, though, you're 6'4". Like, there's no, you can't even slouch. Like, do you see how many times I've been bothered in this room? I'm in a very public place. None. But you, dude, say this book, like, Oprah's like, "I love Dave Hollis. I love him." And, like, this become, like,
here's
you're
the thing.
Tall.
I will say this. I get recognized in part because I think I am a giant monster.
Giant monster.
Here's the thing. Like, the thing that has allowed me to stay connected is, like, the second someone gets excited about seeing me, I reflect their excitement and my excitement in meeting them, because it is a reminder. Well, first of all, like, listen, I am not cool the way you might have considered me to be cool. I am just like you. I there's something in like me saying out loud that I'm the exact same person as you are. Yeah. Like, I have the same worries and concerns that you do. I'm excited about the same things that you are. And me even parroting, like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to meet you, Kim. What an amazing thing that I would run into you in this airport of all people, is a way for me to just, like, remember, like, any amount of people recognizing me or stopping me doesn't make me cool. It will never, like, don't let it go to your head, because it's a luxury. It's a privilege to
get to do it. I think it's fun, dude. It's so fun.
I ask every single person that runs into me, very presumptuously, would you like a picture? And half of them are like, I just wanted to ask you directions to the
dude, it's the most, it's so embarrassing. I've had this happen 100 times in a book signing line. Somebody comes up, they have their phone open and to a camera app, and I go, do you want to take a photo? And they go, no. And you feel like the cockiest, like, is essentially you said, would you like to capture my image? I mean, I'm assuming this is, you would like this image, like. And dude, so many people are going, no.
The thing I love, though, is the look that I tend to get when they don't want a picture is, like, I ask them, hey, I've got a windowless van in the parking lot. Can I show you the interior? Like,
no.
Yeah, what? Come on.
Dude. Oh, dude. People, because that happens to me at events or places I've spoken to. But people are like, does it bother you? Dude, people come up to you at random times and give you compliments throughout the day. That's amazing. Like, how fun is it for somebody to come? Like, imagine if you're walking down the street and somebody goes, hey, I really like your shoes. You're great at picking out shoes. You'd be like, oh, thank you. So, like, when somebody, and I'm not brave enough to talk to somebody else, so I appreciate the bravery. Like, I followed Allen Iverson around the Minneapolis airport for, like, four terminals trying to get the courage up, and he was wearing an Allen Iverson hat. Like, he wasn't incognito. He had a 76ers hat on. Which I feel like is inviting interruption, okay. But I still
can I ask
like
this though, because like that like so I have like a sense for and not like being stalked in a like oh I need to call someone and have a restraining order. I mean like someone is in the wild following me through three terminals. I know, I can feel it.
You could have caught me? No way.
100%. No. What I'm saying is I know, like, whether it's, like, some unconscious scanning of the horizon, I know. And what now has become a thing is, like, when I start to feel it, I'll just stop. And I'll just turn around, and then I'll say, would you like to say hello? Like, I'll break the ice.
You could have caught me. My spycraft is so good. I would have been looking at a newspaper. You would have turned around and been looking.
No.
Like, you would have turned around, I would have been tying my shoe. And you'd be like, oh, I guess he's tying his shoe. He's not following me. Like, no way.
Heidi and I, we were in the gym 2 days ago in, like, Southern California. And we're working out. And there's a woman who has stopped working out. Now, she could have just been taking a long break. But she also was doing this move where it was like. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she's bringing her gaze back to us and not working out. So, you know, like, God bless her. How do you end up like, hey, how are you? You know, like, do you want to, she's like, oh my goodness. I didn't know if I could say hi. I didn't want to interrupt your private time. It's like, it's not that private because we are us and we're standing in a gym and we're the weirdos that are filming everything that we're doing in a gym. Yeah. So we're letting you know that it's up. Like, come on.
That's so funny.
Come take a picture.
I'm glad you caught an amateur. I'm just saying a pro like me, I would be sliding through the crowd like Jason Bourne. Like, there's no, I mean, I would probably be driving a car down a set of stairs before you even got close to me.
This feels like a game. Like, did you ever see the movie Tag?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, at the end of that movie, they show the footage of the actual adults who played this, like, game of Tag.
That's what it would be like. It would be like that.
We're like, I'm just walking along.
You would never know. You know what I would do? It would be like when David gave Saul back some of his rope. That's an OT rest. I would hand you something from your wallet. I would go, I think you dropped this. And you would go, how did you? And by the time you looked at your license, I would be back into the crowd like Batman. That's what it would be. It would be like when Jim Gordon, you probably won't know this reference because I'm sure you hate Batman. But it would be like when Jim Gordon turns for a second and Batman disappears. I'm Batman in this story. You're a really tall Jim Gordon.
Fair. Andy just asked an important question. I'm going to go ahead and give you the answer.
Did you fix it?
No.
Dave.
See it? Can you see it?
What, am I blind? Of course I see it. Like, of course, like, there's planes that see it right now. Like, come on. Dude, Andy is the one who DM'd me. He was like, you got to talk to him about his hair. And I immediately was like, dude, like, if only you had a friend who warned you about that constantly. I've told you that. This is a preventable problem.
The thing is, I don't care. I have to care more. The thing is, I was sitting on this two sets yesterday with cameras recording me from three different angles. And I was like, can you guys let me see the angles real quick?
Did you have a hat on or was it just your head?
No, didn't have a hat on. You know why? I don't care. The thing is, I want to care, and I have decided that I will go to an actual barber now to fix it because I let the internet know. But
yeah.
I just don't. I don't know. I don't care. Here's the headline: you can't use a one on the back and a two on the sides. You can't.
Doesn't work.
You got to blend it, and I don't know how to blend it yet because I'm still an amateur barber.
Here's my concern. You're giving a younger generation the belief that they should do this. Like, whether or not you want to admit, like Charles Barkley, you're a role model, you're a head role model. Like, people see your head.
This can't become a thing.
I just don't like that there's some 14-year-old boy that's about to try this and not get to go to the homecoming dance. You're somebody who has, you're a head influencer. And right now, you're hurting the next generation.
We were sitting at a very late dinner. We had coaching for a ton of time last night after all of these interviews. And I'm sitting, Heidi and I decided to same side couple it. We're a little bit tired. And sure. I turned my head to look up at the TV that was showing the score of the football game. And she just kind of giggled for a second. Yeah. And I was like, what happened? She's like, oh, I just was reminded of your hair. And yeah. I looked at her and she is just the most beautiful woman. And I said, you could literally be sitting here with anyone and you have chosen to sit at this same side table restaurant with me. I don't understand how I won the lotto. Let's go.
Did you have to walk a certain way by the host so that you could even get into the restaurant?
Under a bushel? No. Oh, I'm gonna let it shine, brother. No. I shouldn't even have put the hat on. I'm proud of this.
Show me the side again. Give us one more. Just unbelievable, Dave. Unbelievable. Well, I don't know how we end on a higher note than that. So, Dave, I love you. Proud of the work you're doing. And we'll do this again next week.
Yes, we will. Love you too, brother.
All right. Tell Heidi I said hey.
I'll do it. Have a good day. Have a good weekend.